Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 22nd, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkin.
And I'm Jenner Victoria.
Yeah, it's been a big week. Two of the biggest releases of the fall is out now. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man 2 and Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Yep.
Came out the same day.
Yep.
And so, it's been tough to play much of both with that. But we'll talk about that stuff in a little bit here. But for news, we've got a decent amount of stuff here. We got one of the big execs at Bethesda stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
We got some unfortunate dev news,
mm-hmm.
Particularly involving a recent licensed game that just came out.
Yeah.
And how that came to be.
Yep.
As well as, say, a new way that you can play Nintendo 64 games.
Yeah.
Outside of the handful of other ways that you can, and not too much else. News-wise, it's been a pretty quiet week, but we got plenty of game stuff to talk about, so we'll talk about what we've been playing. I'll kick it off here. We'll talk about Spider-Man 2 and Super Mario Bros. Wonder after the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the other things I've been playing, there's Euro Truck Simulator 2, which has gotten new DLC for the West Balkans.
Mm-hmm.
That is an area of Europe that I'd have not known very much about. I've known of the countries as far as like names and like general area they would be in, but not, you know, any sort of geographical knowledge or much history about them. But these are areas sort of either were part of the Soviet Union or just outside of it that have been through a lot over the last like 80 years or so, 100 years. There's been a lot of shit going on in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this DLC sort of adds those in so that we got a lot of Europe in there now from, you know, Spain and Portugal on the west side all the way up to even including like a little bit of Russia on the east through the Nordic countries and then down to the Balkans for much of that. So they cover a lot. I have not played this as much as American Truck Simulator that I have just over 100 hours in. Euro Truck, I have about 35, 36 hours in and spent a lot of my time in where I started, the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Although they really should add Ireland and Northern Ireland to that. I think that's the one of the weird blind spots they have, but they do have, you know, the UK, so when you go to the mainland of Europe, you have to get on a boat of sorts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's possible to go over to Ireland. They just have not worked on that area yet, but yeah, I've only been to, I think it's Serbia in the most northern part of this. The country's added here, so not delved too deep into the West Balkans, but seems nice so far. Definitely put a little bit of a strain on my graphics card compared to what they basically I drove down from Poland into these areas through Serbia as my main way of getting over there. So that took a bit, but not too bad.
Yeah.
So looking forward to put some more time into that stuff.
Yeah. Like I said last night, when you're driving through Albania, see if you can find any concrete bunkers because there's like over 700,000. There's like over 700,000 of them all over the country in like a grid pattern. Like you'll see them in cities and cemeteries. They're everywhere. So,
yeah. So yeah, I'll be checking that stuff out. Lots of signs of languages I cannot read. So that's another fun aspect of these areas.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I do try to, you know, use the natural way of navigating, you know, when I know what areas I'm going to, like, reading the signs and make sure I'm heading the right direction. You do have a little GPS mini map to kind of give you a hint where to go. So sometimes the different paths kind of blend together, I guess. So, but that's Euro Truck. The other game I'm playing is a fun little like $1 game on Steam called Install Fee Tycoon. That is a spin on the Unity news that came out, you know, a few weeks ago where they were trying to create this new revenue stream of charging devs for installs and somehow would make that retroactive for games they released previously, that kind of thing. And this is a, you know, a riff on that. This is a satirical game where essentially you've been hired by Chaos 3D, the popular game engine, that they've kind of given you this means for raising all of this money to hire people in like the dark web to also install these games and try to run the video game industry into the ground.
Yep.
Fun little bit there. And they do some fun bits where you get like emails that are essentially puzzles where they ask you to do things and that kind of stuff. And it's pretty neat. But yeah, it's only 99 cents, so nothing too ridiculous about it, but it's pretty solid. Maybe the one issue I have is that at this point where I am at in it, I have to just leave it open for a long amount of time to get the money to buy stuff. Though I found a weird little bug where it lets you buy these upgrades in like 1, 5, or 10 increments, but the 10 increment is based on just what the buying one is times 10 versus, you know, being like $1, then like $1.50, then $2. You know, when you buy each one, it gets progressively more expensive, but if you buy them in bulk, it's much cheaper. So I end up just not doing any of that stuff very much. Just waiting to get enough for all 10, and then that bumps up the rate at which I get money pretty quickly. But otherwise, the main progression, I think, is you get a stock app for Chaos 3D, and you're trying to get them up to a point where they make like $1 billion, I think it listed as. So I think I'm about halfway through or so. So not too bad. But that's been pretty much the other stuff I've been playing. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, I had more or less run the course with Cyberpunk 2077, and I decided, you know, I'd been so, immersed in all of these, like, really hyper-realistic sci-fi games, I decided it was time to sort of go in the other direction for a little while. So, I went on PSN, and I purchased a little game called Omori, which is one of those sort of games that came out in the aftermath of Undertale, you know, really taking off and becoming this huge hit and sort of inspired all these other sort of Earthbound inspired postmodern RPGs. Omori is one of the games that came out afterwards. And it definitely wears its Earthbound influences on its sleeves with its combat system and sort of the way it uses emotions as sort of like a major influence on how like combat in the game goes. It's essentially about these two seemingly different but probably not. They're probably the same guy. One of them's named Omori and the other one is named Sunny. And Omori lives in this place that's sometimes called Headspace. It's a sort of whimsically sort of fantasy world where it's all sort of definitely inspired by like a sort of like the look of like childhood memory and make believe and childhood whimsy and all of that sort of, you know, filtered through kind of like a dream logic. That's obviously like got a bunch of people that are obviously like inspired by people that this individual met in real life in some way or form. Omori themselves is a very listless kind of figure that rarely shows any kind of real emotion. They're always in like black and white. There's like no color to them at all. It's heavily implied this individual might be somewhere on the spectrum. And in fact, every time you start a new thing in Headspace, you start off in this little like black and white room that's basically nothing but like a computer, a sketchbook, a bed, and this little cat character. And there's a light bulb and the door that leads outside. And, you know, the like places he can go to or places like, you know, sort of definitely like based on that sort of childhood sort of make-believe. So, like, there's a little place called that's kind of like outer space. There's another one that's like a sort of like a creepy forest that's filled with spiders that leads to, like, this big pink castle that's ruled over by this girl named Sweetheart, who's like a magical girl character with, like, an Ocho laugh, you know? But that's only like one half of the game. The other half of the game takes place in what's seemingly the real world, which is called Faraway Town. You're basically playing this guy named Sonny. I'm guessing he's like a teenager who him and his family are getting ready to move out of town in a few days. And now he is sort of trying to reconnect with, or at least his friends or people he knew are trying to reconnect with him in order to sort of get him out of the house, more or less, because he's apparently developed some kind of serious agoraphobia and has not left his house in like 4 years. And during these like particular segments of the game, you get kind of an idea of what Faraway Town is. You meet a bunch of people that seem to be vaguely reminiscent of the people that you meet in Headspace. And there's also like things here and there that seem to be the inspirations for like some of the various characters that you see in Headspace. Like the Sweetheart character is based on like this anime that Sonny used to watch. There's this other character named Captain Spaceboy that was inspired by a comic book that he used to read when he was a little kid. And the big difference here is that there's a lot of really sort of dark undertones to this, because despite how like weird and whimsical it is on the surface, it becomes very obvious very quickly that something really awful happened to this kid, like fairly recently. Somebody that he knew, probably his sister, died somehow. And Sonny himself seems to have these, let me put it this way, in Headspace, all of the characters in your party have these sort of like childlike weapons, kind of similar to like what, you know, they would do in Earthbound. Like one of them has, you know, like a stuffed animal toy or a pillow as a weapon. Another one has like a spatula, and another one has a basketball. But Omori carries around a kitchen knife, and he's literally the only character in the party that carries around something that's basically a lethal weapon. And the thing is, Sonny ends up carrying around a knife in the beginning of the Faraway stuff. And during the first battle you have with someone, he ends up attacking somebody with the knife. And it ends up having very realistic consequences. The person ends up getting cut. They start bleeding. The guy who's in your party takes the knife away from you. And it's sort of a reflection of like, yeah, all the sort of funny stuff, sort of RPG mechanics you take for granted in the Headspace stuff, try to bring it over into the Faraway Town stuff, and it has pretty realistic consequences. On top of that, I'm also trying to play I Am Bread, and not a lot, because that game is basically designed to piss you off. The graphics are fine, but the controls are incredibly unintuitive and are just designed to really drive you nuts. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Yeah, Dammer, what about you?
Yeah, for me, I've been playing Long Gone Days. I actually finished last night. When I mentioned that, you know, as long as the ending stuck the landing, it would definitely be recommended. I'm not sure if it actually did that, but I'm also not sure if it actually didn't, because you know, as I mentioned like last week, this game is mundane. It's about war, and you know, when things are about war, like you know, there's no such thing as one person making all the difference, because like you know, war is a terrible thing throughout. And yeah, when you get to the ending, it's like it wasn't really satisfying. It was very believable, and you know, like I don't want to spoil it, but you know, it didn't really have much of an impact on me. In fact, it just made me more sad. But, you know, that's what war is. You know, war is sad. At the same time, war is both necessary and unnecessary, and there is no way we get to this point in any of our nations without war. And that's pretty much what the story is about. And, you know, if you thought there'd be some sort of hope with things like ending the war and things like that, that doesn't happen here. But you know, it's an interesting game. Just to quickly like go over like what it's really what the cycle really was like. You know, you start off as the sniper who was recruited to this thing called the Core, and then you find that you're killing innocents, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I don't want to kill innocents, so I'm going to go ahead and not be a part of this. But you know, that's not okay. You do that, you go ahead, you're branded a traitor, and all of a sudden you find yourself in places that you never thought you would be. You know, we end up going places to we end up going to Russia, we end up going to Germany, we end up going to Poland. And it's interesting seeing that your character doesn't know these languages, but he interacts with other characters with the same beliefs as you. That being said, you know, that innocent people shouldn't die. And, you know, it goes off on a narrative on its own. Each place that you go to has certain side quests and whatnot that'll give you things to do. I'm not sure whether these actually have an impact on the story. And I'm sure they do, because they actually have a percentage indicator of where you're at with every territory. But, you know, like I said, I don't know if they actually impact the ending of the story. So that's that. It took me about 11 hours to finish. It can take anywhere between 5 and 10 hours. And yeah, I would still recommend it. It's a solid $20 game. But it's also really showed its age. When I talked about it last week, Brandon said he played the first demo like a few years ago. Like, I don't know when this game first went into development, but this is something that the developers have been working on for a long while, and it's finally out. So yeah, the game's $20 on pretty much all platforms. I'll have a review up sometime this week. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience. And yeah, we have some new games that came out this Friday. I don't know where you wanted me to start.
You can go with Mario Wonder.
Yeah, so Mario Wonder came out along with Spider-Man 2. I've had some time with both, but first I'll talk about Super Mario Wonder. So yeah, this is definitely a game I've had on my radar for quite a while. And the main thing that I want to, you know, really know as I played the game was, how similar was it to the new Super Mario Bros. Games we've had over the past few years going back to the DS? And I'm happy to say that it's very different. The main reason being is you don't start off in the Mushroom Kingdom. So while you still see things like Goombas, Koopa Troopas, and, you know, Bowser Jr.'s, there are a whole bunch of new enemies, there are a whole bunch of new power-ups. And they really changed the game for, you know, for the way the Mario side-scrollers have been for the last few years. And it just feels different as a result. It takes place in the Flower Kingdom, so you have all sorts of different blocks. You have the music blocks that'll allow you to just, you know, jump as high as you want. You have some enemies that you really have to just rely on your own reflexes versus just jumping on them. Like, there are a few, like, ram-like enemies that can only be killed by, you know, them running into other rams or just falling off the course and things like that. You do have things similar to beetles where you have to just jump on them and, you know, use their shields to get rid of them. But they do things like climb up on platforms and through them versus just going left and right and, you know, just staying on them. It's the enemies are similar to a side-scrolling Metroid in that regard, based on, like, a lot of it has been made up about the fact that this uses a different art design. It hasn't really hit for me yet. It still feels like the previous new Super Mario World games, but the fact that, like, the game just plays different, everything from the jumps to the running feels a little, it's just really cool in that regard. I'm sure people have seen previews about the Wonder Seed that'll change levels. So far in the game, every level has one, and yeah, it definitely changes the way the game is played. So I'm sure people have seen previews where the warp pipes, you know, act like worms, and they jump up and things like that. But for the most part, the thing that these Wonder Seeds do is it really changes the dynamics of the level. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Mario has always been about, you know, going to the flagpole, and this is the same thing, except that now it really changes the way you want to do it. So, you know, a while ago I mentioned those rams that just, you know, bump into everything. But one nuance is that you can have a whole bunch of rams attached to each other, and from there it's like riding a magic carpet. You know, you want to make sure that you don't get in their way, but in the same time they're necessary, where you have to make sure that you're standing on them to make sure that you don't die. And, you know, there are these other power-ups and flowers where random coins can show up in random places. And, you know, obviously you want to pick those up. And the purple coins and the special seeds allow you to open up other places around in the world. The biggest change that I want to mention is every world has a certain number of levels that you can play in any order. There are some that are locked up to the items that you have. Like you want to make sure that you have, like, you know, 5 seeds in order to unlock this level. But for the most part, you know, everything is there. And if you're struggling in one level, there's no reason why you can't just go on to the next one, because the difficulties are pretty spread out. From what I've played so far, there was a level where it's a 4-star difficulty rating, and then they go as low as 1. So obviously the 1-star difficulty ratings are going to be things like that. I also had a chance to play with multiplayer, and unlike Super Mario or the new Super Mario Brothers games, you can't really interfere with each other. So one thing that was pretty annoying, yet, you know, it made sense, was the fact that, you know, you can bump into other playable characters and lift them up. So you can do things like carry them, or they can, you know, mess you up in any level. And in Mario Wonder, that can't happen. It's kind of like other platformers where, you know, what you do doesn't impact another character. So, you know, if they die, it's going to be like at their own accord. You can't be the reason why somebody else died or didn't die, and things like that. But yeah, one thing that really makes Super Mario Wonder special is the fact that, you know, they know that it's been a popular series for a number of years. And, you know, I would go back to Super Mario Odyssey as an example. I'm sure you guys have played through Super Mario Odyssey up to New Donk City, where, you know, if you did the Pauline level, it sort of acted like a tribute to Mario games, where all of a sudden the game switches to 2D, and, like, you hear this great music that just makes you, you know, really feel for the series, especially if this game has similar moments. Like, there are points where there's a bonus level, and you have to collect all the coins, and basically they're lined up on a music sheet, and all of a sudden that music sheet is playing a popular melody from a previous Mario Brothers game. So there's a lot of fan service there, and Mario Wonder is just one of those games that, you know, it feels new, yet at the same time feels familiar. And, you know, it's just, for lack of a better term, it's a wonder. You know, it's a wonderful game. It's definitely something that's been a tribute to the Mario games of the past. And, you know, after Super Mario Odyssey, which did the same thing, it's really cool seeing stuff like that. And I'm only in World 2, you know, or I just finished World 2, so I haven't really gotten a chance to really dive into what makes the game, you know, deeper than others. Like, if you go back to New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe or New Super Mario Bros. U, there were a whole bunch of levels that were not only difficult, but the inspirations drew from things like Van Gogh, Starry Night, and whatnot. I haven't seen anything to that extent in this game yet, but I will say that when you unlock or when you use the Wonder Seeds to change up the level's design, there are some nuances that really make it really different, and it's just cool seeing that. Like, you know, obviously with the advent of things of games like Mario Maker, where you can make your own levels and play other people's levels, it's good to see that Nintendo still has that master class as far as making a good side-scrolling level. And I haven't played a side-scrolling Mario game this good since maybe the SNES, or maybe like the first New Super Mario Bros. Game on DS, because that was one that I was really clamoring for. You know, at that point in time, there wasn't a new Mario side-scroller in over 10 years, and it's kind of the same thing with this game. So yeah, I'm really enjoying a lot of it. Obviously, only 2 worlds through, so I'm not really in the full experience. But I'm sure Chris has been playing this also has some stuff to say.
Yeah, I am in World 2, probably near the end of it. But I've been kind of bouncing around a little bit in there and managed to get to the secret world of levels that seem to be very challenging levels. So much so I probably lost about 10 lives trying the first one and then just gave up on it. Kind of went back to the others because it made a lot more sense to do that. But the thing that stuck out to me with this game is so much there is so much life to the animation in a way that the 2D Mario games haven't had in a long time. Maybe since Yoshi's Island. There's a lot of extra animation stuff going on when you get the fire flower. You see some fireballs sort of flying around Mario's body before you get control, you know, to do your own fireball stuff. There's a lot of fun stuff like that, like going into pipes. Mario's hat falls off and then his arm comes back out to grab it and pull it in. Some very kind of Looney Tunes-esque kind of stuff there. To it, that just stands out really as some, giving the game more life than I think any of the new Super Mario Brothers games ever gave to me. Maybe outside like the new Super Luigi U expansion for new Super Mario Brothers U. But it's been a lot of fun to play. The online stuff is actually pretty well done for this. You essentially just connect to the, you know, the online network. And as you're exploring the areas, you kind of get Super Mario 3D World style map areas to walk around on. And occasionally, you know, you can find, you know, question mark blocks or whatever to hit to get extra coins or whatever that you'll see other people walking around on. I don't think you can do anything with that, but once you get into a level, you have usually a few people in there playing it alongside you. They're not physically there with you. They're essentially ghosts as far as you're concerned. But as you're playing, if you like fall into a pit and die, you turn into a ghost and you can hit the B button to kind of fly around pretty quickly. If you can hit one of them or the little standees that you leave behind, you kind of come back to life. Though I've had some stages where I turn into a ghost and I am confused why, because I didn't see any standees or anything that I could, you know, respawn with. As far as I could see, it might have been something I missed, but along the way you have like a little emote button to maybe try to get people's attention. There's been some fun little challenge stages. One of which is like, oh, you have to find these five tokens. And you kind of have to figure out like what you need to do to trigger some of them to appear and that kind of stuff. Some more puzzly stages that are really fun to play with and that kind of stuff. And yeah, you kind of just seeing other people play, you kind of learn, you know, more of like, oh, there's something up here because there's people over here, you know, or, you know, trying to figure out like sometimes you have background stages that you can get to and you're like, well, where do I get do that? Or where do I find some of these secret paths in there and that kind of stuff? And that stuff is a bit easier with the other people, as well as you get, you know, notices of people finishing or them dying and looking for help, that kind of stuff. That makes it a bit more of a fun experience with other people playing as, you know, ghost players. I don't know what the criteria for that is, because it doesn't seem like if I'm playing Mario that there are other Marios. Because I think it just calls you when it notifies other people, like, Mario just finished, you know, that kind of thing. Versus your username that you pick in there. So I think they're hedging from people, you know, using curse words and such in that. So, but yeah, it's pretty nice. And the other thing is, like, besides the gold coins that you use to get, you know, one-ups and that kind of stuff, they do a nice job with the other currency, the flower coins that's used to unlock stuff at the merchants that are in each area. Which initially you can buy like the wonder seeds that are part of the currency, as well as more lives if you need to, or you can buy more standees. And that's kind of a very kind of gacha element, as it just picks one of like 140 or whatever is in the game to unlock. But I don't think, I don't know. I think it randomly picks one when you put down a standee for the character you're using. But yeah, I've unlocked probably a couple for each of the characters, but I don't think it uses any of the other ones, since they're tied to the character. So, there's some extra stuff there. I kind of wish you could pick one to be your main to use, but I have a bunch for, you know, different moves that Mario can do or different power-up stuff, that kind of stuff. But Yeah. But then they put like a point value over it, which you get more points for helping other people, for reviving their ghosts or your standees helping them, things like that. So it kind of helps give you a little bit like, oh, this is the person that helps other people, and this maybe somebody does not as much. But, you know, if you're a slower player than others, then you maybe don't get as much opportunity to help people, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's got a lot of neat elements to it, and they have built a lot of nice side stages, challenge stages, that kind of stuff, that are all about, you know, unlocking more of these badges that give you more moves. Right. Or extra like perks of sorts. Like I tend to use one that gives me more coins for defeating enemies, where I think I get at least 3 coins per enemy, plus the one that drops when you kill an enemy. But there's some for putting more blocks into the stage, which I don't know where that is useful. There's other ones for every time you respawn in a stage, it automatically gives you a mushroom, so you start up as Big Mario. There's plenty more, but a lot of the other ones are like, here's one that gives you a floating thing. You use your hat to float for longer distances, or like here's a big jump that you get, or one that has you just bouncing constantly, like a spring, or one that gives you a better or a different kind of wall jump where you get like a jump that jumps you up a bit before you, you know, jump across with it, that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of ways that you can kind of make the game different into the ways that you want to play it, that works best for you, that kind of stuff. Maybe some stuff that makes it easier. This might be a means for adding some accessibility, but I've not seen a ton of these that are great for that. And also accessibility should just be in the game as an option by default versus, you know, badges. Options wise, there's not a ton in there. There are definitely ones for turning off the flowers saying stuff. If you want their, see their little text, but you don't want their audio to play, or you can just turn all that off. But the flowers kind of give you sometimes some hints. You're like, oh, I wonder if there's a way to get over there kind of thing. And like encourage you to explore a little more, or maybe give you a hint of how to get to certain areas, that kind of stuff. But yeah, this game's really good. It's been really fun. I've been mostly kind of playing, you know, a few stages at a time, not really playing it in big chunks, just kind of do a few stages, get some stuff, see what else is going on. Looking for getting as many of the seeds as I can get, but there's, you know, a point where I'm not replaying stages to get all of them, because there's usually 2 in each of the main stages. One that you get from doing the Wonder Seed or Wonder Flower segment in it, and one for beating it. So those are some aspects of it. I've missed a couple in some of these stages, but I haven't like wanted to go back to do 100% just yet. Just kind of exploring and seeing where it all goes. And the story is so far pretty simple. Bowser wants to cause chaos again and ends up getting this wonder flower that merges him with the kingdom, the flower kingdom's castle. So he's just a giant floating castle, which is a weird thing, but you know, they play off a little bit of that absurdity. So it's a very nice game. Definitely recommend it if you are looking for like a co-op Mario game, or just a pretty good Mario game that is going to give you something more than just nostalgia to it. Because it has a lot of unique level design, enemy design. The Wonder Seeds add a lot of variety to the game, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's worth checking out if you got a Switch. Maybe one of the last big games to come out for it here. So yeah. All right. I think we'll go over to Marvel Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Because we got that also that came out. Mm-hmm. I've played about maybe 6 hours or so. Basically, to the point, I'm trying to think of how to say this story-wise without spoiling anything. Peter starts the game with one job, loses it, and now he has gotten a potential second job, mm-hmm. a new job that might be kind of a dream job for him. That's all I'll say. Sort of story-wise, I've been doing a lot of side stuff because it opens up some more things to do in districts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, been liking this a lot. It feels like a Spider-Man game that learned a lot from the criticisms of the first game,
mm-hmm.
Where you know a lot of your district activity was very tedious when it got to the point of doing, you know, a bunch of the crime stuff to complete them. We had to do, like, I think, like 5 of them in each district, and that's added up a lot for people
mm-hmm.
For that game, as well as some of the other stuff was not super engaging or super rewarding to mm-hmm. it. Here they've kind of simplified a lot of that stuff so that the currency, there is sort of one main currency for crafting and upgrading stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is the thing there, and there's a couple other token currencies that are sort of intended to upgrade different things that you can do upgrades for, you know, unlocking suits. There are gadgets to upgrade again. It's fairly similar to the first game. And mm-hmm. then there are what they call tech upgrades, which increases like 4 different kind of stats. It's like health, suit speed stuff, like for swinging and getting around the city. There's one for that. There's one for damage. And I think the third one is for gadget stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I haven't done a ton with those things, but doing a lot of the side stuff, you get a good amount of the currencies you need to get that. But also if you're short on something, you can literally hit the triangle button to bring up a list of like, here's all the things you can do to get these currencies. And it'll be like, oh, you can do, you know, some of the crime stuff that pops up, or, you know, do these different activities, that kind of stuff. Mm. You know, like a thing games like this should do. And you also have a bunch of question marks because they don't reveal everything right away of mm-hmm. all these side activities. Kind of unfurls itself over time as you progress in the story. So, like, I have things to do with the predator stuff from mm-hmm. Miles Morales, as you know, Miles and his uncle Aaron sort of were on good terms in Miles Morales, and then got into bad terms, and now are back on good terms again
mm-hmm.
as they've sort of come to an understanding of sorts. But they are worried about his tech. Like, if you haven't played Miles Morales, he has like a bunch of hideouts all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has things stashed in there. He's afraid of, we're going to get to the bad guy's hands. So he has Miles to, you know, go and deal with this stuff and find them. So there's like maybe one in each district, and not even in every district. I have some stuff like the Harry Osborn mm-hmm. stuff in the first game, where it's like this eco tech stuff. That's a whole thing there. There's mm-hmm. like photo opportunities. And the big intro of the game involves Sandman,
mm-hmm.
You know, wreaking havoc all over the city. Spoilers, I guess, if you haven't seen anything, but this is literally the very beginning of the game, as mm-hmm. Peter and Miles are trying to do their thing, and they see, like, oh, there's all this sand piling up, and, you know, see that, oh, Marco's at it again for some reason, and they're very confused why, because they haven't heard from him for a while. And once you get through that intro, then there's one more. It seems like the lore currency for this game is finding these heart crystals from left behind by Marco that are sort of going to tell a story of sort of how Marco got to this point of attacking the big city stuff, doing all that. So you just go around and fight some of his little sand dudes for a bit. Nothing too complicated. You sort of take this crystal heart and you crack it open to get a little narration of like things that are going on with that have been going on with him mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you get a lot of like stuff like that just adds to the story. Cause yeah, this game has a lot going on as you might expect, because it's, you know, Peter and Miles, dealing with the aftermath of things that have happened in the, you know, their games. And very much is the perennial storyline with the two is like balance, trying to find balance between their superhero lives and their personal lives. You know, Miles is trying to get into college and trying to finish this essay he needs to do to add to his application to the school that he wants to get to. Peter has trying to find balance in his personal life and get a job that he can keep and not, you know, risk getting fired if he has to go do his Spider-Man thing.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And also has to deal with the house left behind by his Aunt May, which I was sort of confused, like, why is this house at risk? And because to fund a feast, she mortgaged the house again, and Peter, mm-hmm. you know, being constantly out of work, does not exactly have a ton of money to pay for yeah. the mortgage stuff. And so he's at risk of, you know, dealing with that, as well as his relationship with Mary Jane Watson. And, you know, you got Harry back in the picture as expected. And yeah, still kind of at the point where Kraven the Hunter has kind of made his grand appearance in New York City. Causing lots of chaos as he's trying to hunt the biggest game of all superhero villains. Mm-hmm. And sort of makes his appearance similar to the gameplay sequence we saw a couple of months ago of the boats and all that kind of stuff. But this was a bit different as it involves other characters, some of which are being transferred from the Raft, the big superhero prison.
Mm.
Or they seem to be run by idiots, because Scorpion, you know, has this big suit and all that. They just left him in that suit, complete with still with the poison in the tail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, wait, why did you just put like cuffs on the tail and all that? Why didn't you take him out of the suit?
Mm-hmm.
So that he, like, I don't know that he's like fused in the suit or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he gets, a chance to break out of it and uses the tail for stuff. And I'm like, how is this guy, what are you idiots doing in this prison? And obviously they keep breaking out, so they're not doing that much, but yeah, it's got a lot of cool stuff. The game looks really good. I'm playing on the performance mode. So it's 60 FPS with ray tracing and all that. Looks really nice. The new, ways of getting around the city are really nice. You got, you know, your classic swinging stuff, but they have, you know, launchers on some buildings that can launch Peter or Miles around the city at, you know, great distances and speeds. You also get the ability to unlock stuff in your skill tree.
Mm.
They give you more ways of getting from, you know, ground level to across the city pretty fast. You also have the wings, the spider wings that, you know, you've seen in at least one of the Spider-Man movies, recent ones with Tom Holland. Mm-hmm. That stuff is pretty neat. And they've added some weird mechanics to that so that you'll find like wind tunnels of sorts that can just take you around the city. Mm-hmm. That, you know, don't make any sense in reality, but they're just trying to add more ways to get around the city quickly.
Mm.
So there's that. The stat stuff you can do to upgrade also includes like making certain of those sort of ability things much faster. So they're basically trying to make it easy to get around, which kind of dovetails with the quick travel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't have that early on, you have to, you essentially have a meter within each district. So you're doing the side stuff fills that up. And I think on the second unlock is the fast travel there. So you can fast travel anywhere within that district pretty quickly. And from everything I've seen, that's supposed to be ridiculously fast to do that. But I've had fun still just, you know, swinging around, doing some of the flying stuff. You can go back and forth pretty easily, and I have abilities that give me some extra boost out of it, so which I think is more of a Miles thing from Miles Morales, as he has like the big jump stuff that he could do when swinging around. But you can, you know, do all that while you're flying and all that. You just have to make sure you go back into flying, because it takes you out of that to do jumps and turbo boost stuff and all that kind of stuff. It's a game with a lot of ways to get around, so that if you're just really impatient, you can fast travel when you unlock it. But if you enjoy the Spider-Man stuff, you can swing around and do all that stuff as well. They have a ton of options in the settings, so that you can tweak a lot of things as much as you want, including for the swinging, but also accessibility stuff. Maybe the only real issue I have with it is in the subtitles, where they just label Miles and Peter as Spider-Man, and you get a little Spider-Man icon of like their mask next to their name when they're talking. And you get like a little circle with red stuff or black stuff in there for, you know, Peter or Miles. And sometimes a little tough to tell which is which if you're doing stuff with it. But also I can, at this point, sort of pay attention, notice which voice is which easily enough, so it's not too bad. Just one of those things where they also do that for missions, where it's like, oh, this is a Miles mission. It's got the little mask icon that is mostly black, so it's like, okay, that's a... And also when you're picking the mission to track it, it'll be like, oh, this is for the other character. You don't want to switch to them? And that stuff's all pretty seamless. So, yeah, it's a fantastic Spider-Man game. I'm looking forward to put more time into it. Lots of good story to it. Early on, you're getting a lot of flashback stuff as it tries to flesh out, you know, Peter's relationship with Harry and Miles' past stuff and all that. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I got to say. Danerb, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man 2, aside from Tears of the Kingdom earlier this year, was my most anticipated game of the year. And so far, it's delivered on just about every front, pretty much for every reason Chris has mentioned. I'm really enjoying the narrative so far. You know, obviously, you're using both Peter and Miles throughout the things that they have to deal with. Peter's story is really, quote unquote, more adult. Chris mentioned the fact that, you know, he can't pay for Aunt May's house at the moment, just because like she took out, or she remortgaged the home after having to deal with a whole bunch of community service stuff. Whereas Miles is, you know, having to deal with things like applying to college and like things like that. So it's different in that regard. But at the end of the day, their stories are the same, and it's really interesting seeing those things play out. I haven't gone to the Venom stuff yet, so I don't know how that'll go, but it's interesting seeing Kraven. I did not even know about Kraven until I got into Marvel Snap, which I don't really play anymore, so I'm really interested in seeing how menacing of an enemy he can be. But yeah, Spider-Man 2 is pretty much just, you know, what we got out of Spider-Man 2018 and Miles Morales, just a whole lot more ways to traverse, as well as finding ways to, you know, make the game more accessible from a standpoint of someone that's already like enjoyed the game so far. You know, we talked about traversal. You have the spider wings that really give Miles and Peter a new way to explore New York City, especially since, you know, the entirety of Brooklyn from the Miles Morales game, as well as like the New York from Spider-Man, is there. And the cool thing with the wings is that you have the zipper loops and rings that you can go through in order to go faster, and finding ways to combine the two web slinging and spider wings ways to move out throughout the world is awesome. And, you know, as I've mentioned in Spider-Man 2018, when I got my hands on that game, and games like Grand Theft Auto existing, like, Spider-Man has been by far, like, my most enjoyed modern city-based open-world games there are, just because of the way you can traverse. You don't have to worry about stealing cars. You can just, you know, web-sling your way throughout, and it's just a whole lot more fun that way. And then Miles Morales added the tricks and whatnot, and it's just really, really fun. As far as things to do in the open world, you know, there are it's different in the fact that you don't have to worry about backpacks anymore. At least from what I've seen, you can find some of this Sandman's memories through the little jewels he's left. You also have to worry about some of the tech that the Prowler left, and you know. There are a lot of things to do in the open world, and none of it is really a waste of time, because you get things like experience points to go ahead and build on the various things that Miles and Peter can do. So they have their own upgrade screens where, you know, you can go ahead and change up what Miles can do. You can go ahead and change up what Peter can do. And then they also have shared abilities that they can, you know, go ahead and use your points in such a way that makes sense for you. If you happen to use Peter more, you can go ahead and change up his abilities. If you happen to use Miles more, you can use his. If you want to combine the two, you can go ahead and find ways to make theirs better. And on that same note, you can go ahead and change their fighting styles and their traversal styles, and it's really cool seeing that. But yeah, what I'm finding most impressive about Spider-Man 2, as well as Super Mario Wonder, is the fact that it's a game that you can definitely play with a whole lot of other people watching. So whether you're streaming it on Twitch or something, or whether you're playing it with other people, there's enough here to keep people invested, both the players and the people watching you involved. And I think that's pretty much all I have to say for right now, just because, you know, obviously we haven't really you know, seen most of what both of these games have to offer, because they came out the same day. But I'm definitely enjoying both these games, and I look forward to playing more.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and Spider-Man, like the first game in Miles Morales, generally does a good job of not making you waste a ton of time on things. You know, the Platinums for Spider-Man is pretty reasonable. Miles Morales is a little bit less, because it requires you to play the game again. But from what I've seen of this one, it looks like it's not going to be too bad either. A lot of stuff are just completing the main mission stuff, as well as doing, you know, side things, unlocking all the outfits and all that stuff. So that seems like it's going to be a pretty fun ride through the game. So, yeah, I think that's going to do it for Spider-Man 2 and Super Mario Wonder. We'll talk about that stuff some more next time. When we get more time into those games. But let's get to some news. We got more Game Pass stuff here to go. And yeah, we've got a handful more games here. Let's see, available now, there's Like a Dragon Isshin for console and PC. That is the feudal Japan samurai era, you know, Yakuza game of sorts that came out on the PS3 and PS4 back in the day, but they've done a good job of, you know, upgrading it and remaking it a bit to make it better for like the modern games. So you get a lot of more old school style of characters and areas to explore, but you know, with a bunch of characters that look like the ones from the modern games. So that's one you can check out now. Also available now, F1 Manager 2023, where you get to, you know, manage an F1 team, doing all that stuff. If that interests you, that's console and PC. And for, let's see, stuff that's coming up here on October 24th, this is a weird thing. Cities Skylines 2 is coming out just on PC. The console versions, I guess, got delayed to, I forget when. I think it is early next year. But also the PC release here, and I looked it up on the Game Pass app, is not being labeled as an early access thing, nor is it on Steam. But the devs have said that it is going to be a rough launch for the game,
mm-hmm.
As far as performance and that kind of stuff. So that is a thing you should keep in mind, because they seem to not be noting any of this with the Game Pass or the Steam release of this game. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of a shitty thing to do, make people think it's going to be, you know, polished, ready to launch game, but hopefully it works well for people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, looking at this, it's not like, oh, it's in, you know, preview state or anything, so they're happy to take your, $50 for the base game, or $90 for the Ultimate Edition. You should probably not buy that unless you're got plenty of money to spare.
Yeah.
But let's see what else. October 26th, Dead Space is coming to EA Play. So if you have Game Pass Ultimate or EA Play separately on Xbox, PlayStation, or PC, you can check out the remake of the original Dead Space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be a very good game.
Yep. I'm happy they're letting us get this, so I have to buy it.
Yeah. So. But play that for Halloween, just in time.
Yep.
Also for Halloween, Frog Detective, the entire mystery for console.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think it's been on PC Game Pass for a little while now. This is a detective, you know, mystery game.
Mm-hmm.
But you're playing a Frog Detective who has a fun, silly time with stuff, even if it's gets a little spooky at times. But it's one of those kind of fun, silly games. So there you go for that. That's October 26th. I think, yeah, these couple here are October 26th. Also on that day, that's Thursday, isn't it? Yeah, Thursday. Mineko's Night Market, console and PC. I remember trying to check this out a month ago and realized it was the Switch and PC launch, but the Xbox and PlayStation launch is coming up now this week for that. So this will be on console and PC. I was surprised they held the PC Game Pass version as well. But I'm guessing that's part of some deal with Nintendo to have an exclusive launch there for that. But that's the cozy game of sorts, featuring Mineko in her new hometown. You know, make friends, collect stuff, revive the night market, and uncover the truth of the great sun cat Nico. So there you go, some fun times there. Let's see, October 31st, we got two games here. Headbangers Rhythm Royale. This is a battle royale game, but featuring a bunch of pigeons. As they go through a bunch of rhythmic challenges to see who's the ultimate headbanger. Or I guess the master headbanger, they call it here. So yeah, there you go. Get some unlocks, customization stuff, and all that kind of stuff going on. So there you go for that. And also on the 31st, Jusant, console and PC. That is the climbing adventure game made by Don't Nod, I believe. And I played the demo on Steam Next Fest a while ago, and I'm really looking forward to this. Kind of just climbing up this big structure that, you know, seems to suggest this is a thing that has survived, you know, climate change. Like you're potentially finding this thing in the ocean that has, you know, dried up, and sort of climbing up with all the kind of more realistic mechanics than you might expect. You have your climbing tools and, you know, anchors and all that kind of stuff to try to get up and explore around this big tower thing. So yeah, that's October 31st. So yeah, there you go. Some neat stuff there for the rest of this month here.
Yeah, definitely a solid month. Frog Detective looks pretty interesting, and Mineko's Night Market is one that, along with Jusant, Jusant especially, so looking forward to seeing how these go.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for some stuff there. Let me see what else here. We got Oh yeah, Lake. One of my favorite games of last year was a very fun narrative adventure game where you got to play a woman who took over a mail route for her dad, mm-hmm. And drive a mail truck around to deliver mail and packages and such. In the yeah, I think 1986 it was taking place in. But this is some DLC, adds some Christmas-themed story stuff set in the year before, mm-hmm. Where you're playing as her father, mm-hmm. Thomas Weiss. So you get to get a little more story of like why he might be looking to retire and that kind of stuff and enjoying the holiday season and all that. That'll be out November 15th. So I'm looking forward to that to deliver some more mail and have some fun there. So yeah, that looks cool. Yeah. And let's see, next up here, Like a Dragon Gaiden is going to be out in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
November 9th. But unfortunately, one thing you might be expecting for this game to have it launch is an English dub, and it seems like thanks to the English voice actor for Kiryu, has said that, yeah, that's not going to be happening. As he says here on his Twitter account, since Like a Dragon Gaiden is a few weeks away, many may not know about this. I thought I should let you know the English dub will not be available on the November 9th launch date. We're released as a post-launch patch. No official date yet. Hope you look forward to it. So yeah, I don't know if I knew that there was going to not be an English dub for this game. It just seems like a thing you would expect out of these games at this point, since they've been doing that for the last few games.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sega has not announced a date yet for this or really even made this an official thing, so they might be waiting to have a date. I don't know. But yeah, if you need the English dub, that's a thing you should probably wait on. It'll be on Game Pass at launch, so if you have that, you can, you know, check it out when that's ready.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, people might be asking, like, why care about an English dub? It's like, it's an accessibility feature. It's for people that would like English voice acting, so that helps them better take in the dialogue, as well as for the people like me. It's tough to watch Japanese dubbed anime because I'm, you know, doing other stuff as well while I'm watching it, and not having the English just makes it a little bit tougher to follow. Either I have to put all of my attention into watching the thing or paying attention to the story, especially in like a Dragon where the cutscenes can go on for a while. You have a propensity to have something else to look at while you're listening to the story kind of stuff. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way that I look at it.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a bummer. For me, it doesn't particularly matter because for the most part with the Yakuza series, I have played sub to begin with. But when you think about Like a Dragon Gaiden, it's a fact of where this series has gone in recent years. Ever since Yakuza 6, the game has had, you know, the localization and the dub ready on day one. And with Like a Dragon Gaiden, for whatever reason, it's not happening. And I'm assuming this won't be the case. Like a Dragon 2 or whatever, Yakuza 8 coming out in January or February or whatever month, the one with each one. And, you know, it hasn't been the case for the Lost Judgment game. And, you know, you look at a game like this where the main character obviously Kiryu, like the character that really put it on the map in the first place, it's like you feel like he's not getting the same respect. But at the same time, it's also noted that this game is not getting a physical edition, at least right away. And, you know, you wonder, like, how much effort is, you know, is the Ryu studio actually doing to, you know, really give it the respect it deserves. Yakuza is definitely more beloved now than as it has been. And so it's unfortunate to see this. But, you know, the fact that it is getting one, you know, definitely raises, you know, some confidence there. But they really should have had a dub at the start. And, you know, I'm not even a fan of the dub, but it really should have.
Yeah, I wonder if it's them trying to have one release date around the world, worldwide release, and maybe the English dub wasn't ready for that. So they're trying to Because, you know, they got Infinite Wealth coming out in a few months for that. So it's been like the rare year where there's like three of these games coming out.
Mm-hmm.
With Isshin, Gaiden, and Infinite Wealth coming out within about a year of each other.
Yeah, I would say that, primarily because they're so spread thin. But again, like going back to Yakuza 6, there has been a dub on day one. Still disappointed on that part. I get it, but, you know, it just feels like they're getting the shorter end of the stick here, and there's really no reason why.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully it's not too long of a delay. Hopefully it's not like 6 months or anything like that. That would be disappointing.
Because
with the Game Pass stuff, you know, they're making it a little more accessible for the average person to check one of these out. And if they don't have the English dub, at least within maybe a month or so, they'll kind of blow a little bit of their chance to expand the audience reach a little bit more there. But yeah, looking forward to this, seeing how it turns out, how weird this game is. Because it seems like it's going to be pretty weird. For that. So yeah, let's get to the next thing here. We've got some new analog hardware, the Analog 3D, which you can probably guess just from that name, because it you probably can't. It's a Nintendo 64, essentially. An FPGA Nintendo 64 from Analog.
Yeah.
That'll be capable of playing all regions of N64 games to it. So you can, you know, play any Japanese or European carts you might have as well. They have given like a little hint of how it looks, which it seems like it looks fairly similar to an N64, that kind of style. The controller basically looks like they, some of the, I'm trying to think who it is, maybe Retrobit. There's some companies out there that have done like N64 controllers, but not three-pronged, just a regular-looking controller kind of thing to it. And that seems to be kind of what they are doing here. That looks pretty nice. Now, it might not be Retrobit I'm thinking of. No, they have some N64 stuff like this. But this is like an 8-bit DOE controller. It's wireless, and they say this will be able to output at 4K over HDMI. Being able to do some upgrade stuff to the games, so that, you know, by default just plays the games as they looked and ran, but then you can do some overclocking stuff to make them run better frame rates, and maybe remove some of the weird visual filter stuff that was kind of endemic to the N64 games. That kind of stuff. But yeah, it'll have, let's see, 4 controller ports. You can use your original N64 controllers as well as some of the third-party stuff that's been made in recent years. That is pretty neat. So yeah, that looks like a neat console, though I don't have any N64 games at this point. It's not one I've kept games for, unlike my Super Nintendo stuff. But even then, I don't have a working 60 or Super Nintendo to use for that. So,
Yeah,
I thought about the analog stuff, but I've also been like, what if I don't spend, you know, a couple $100 on this and just keep emulating it instead, and just kind of dealing with that as much as possible. But seems like they'll fully announce this here at some point in the near future. So yeah, that looks like some neat hardware. The only ones of their hardware I've been looking at lately is the Pocket.
Yeah.
Because I got a bunch of Game Boy stuff and Game Boy Advance games, and it would definitely be nice to have a very nice looking piece of hardware like that to play them on. But I'm also like, yeah, but I can also emulate, especially with the way that the stuff kind of kept going out of stock, but they got a bunch of transparent versions that it's like, I didn't really like those kind of things back in the day, and I don't need them now. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I think the analog is a pretty cool device, but I don't really have much of a reason to go back to those games, not to mention a lot of the Game Boy lineup is slowly being made available. And then as for the N64, you know, not only are they doing this on the NSO, but the N64 is definitely not one I'd really want to go back to, just because, like, you know, those graphics, I don't care if you put them in 4K resolution, they have not aged well at all. You know, there is absolutely no reason to go back to a PlayStation or N64 game unless it's like a classic of a classic. And even then, like, those are hard to play in today's standards. And
that
enjoys my retro gaming, but that is the one generation that makes it really hard to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think PlayStation's the one I can go back to. There's a lot of fun games there and stuff I have a lot of nostalgia for and still have the discs for. But yeah, N64 was the one where I was like, I got this for the Aki wrestling games, and that's kind of mostly it.
Yep.
And those definitely won't ever appear on any sort of subscription service.
Nope.
That Nintendo runs, so.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, N64 games are hard to run in emulation on regular controllers because those are all four buttons, and a 64 is a six-button controller.
Mm-hmm.
And that's annoying.
And it's also got probably one of the worst design controllers ever. Like, I mean, yeah. I would say probably, I mean, it's not as bad as, say, the controller for, you know, the original Xbox or, you know, the one that came with the CDI, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, that's why there are Retrobit and Retro Fighters have their own versions of the N64 controllers that also work with the Switch and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And yeah, I'm looking at the Retro Fighter one, and it's like $35. It looks pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you need that? Those are wired versions. Wireless ones, you can also get that. You also get them any fucking color you want, because whatever. Mm-hmm. Get an orange one if you want. Retro Fighters made a good Dreamcast controller.
Mm-hmm.
That won't destroy your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an amazing feat. So, yeah, there are some companies out there doing some cool stuff like that.
Mm.
Make those old controllers much better, and then make them playable on, you know, modern consoles as well as PC for emulation's sake and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of gets past some of the flaws of those controllers. So,
yep.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of fun stuff, Pete Hines has had fun at Bethesda over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's been there for 24 years, which is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he has announced that he is leaving Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
As of, let's see, I'm not sure if he set a date on here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he is stepping down to leave. He was the head of publishing,
mm-hmm.
as well as like a senior vice president. An exec, so he's made plenty of good money, I guess, of late, especially probably with whatever stock stuff might have happened with the Microsoft acquisition. Probably made decent money off of that as well. So he's announced that, as it says here, I will begin an exciting new chapter of my life, exploring interests and passions, donating my time where I can, and taking more time to enjoy life. This is not a decision I came to easily or quickly, but after an amazing career culminating in the incredible launch of Starfield, I feel like the time is right.
Mm-hmm.
It says here, this is certainly not goodbye by any means. Working with the amazing people, teams, and studios at Bethesda has been the greatest experience of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Love you guys. He's also a guy that's well known for being kind of shitty on Twitter.
Yep.
People were asking, like, in the middle of, you know, the last couple of months of Starfield, I'm like, what happened to the Fallout 4 upgrade you guys announced a while ago? And he was just like, we're working on Starfield. Just, like, not wanting to be like, we'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything, just being very kind of snippy to people, asking questions, and I'm sure he gets a lot of questions and that kind of stuff. But people have put up, you know, lots of comments over the years of him being just kind of really snide and all that kind of stuff to people.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't like the question, just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most people do. But He seems like he's done pretty solid work over the years, so we'll see if he does anything more in games or if he just takes time to relax for a while. So, yeah, there you go.
Yep.
But let's see what's up here. Also, in kind of more Microsoft news, Mojang had their Minecraft Live event, I think it is. Minecraft Live 2023, where they announced various things about the game, but also mentioned that it had reached 300 million copies sold worldwide since it launched in 2009.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of copies, but also makes sense because, you know, in the early days of Minecraft, you had to buy multiple copies for friends and stuff. But also now it's on every platform.
Yeah.
You could once, and if you want to play it on that platform, you need to buy it. So imagine there's a lot of people that bought that game multiple times or bought it on the new consoles or whatever, wherever they spend their gaming time. So 300 million is a lot. It also makes sense that, I don't know, the audience is 300 million people, but they probably also pass some of those games down to, you know, little brothers and sisters and kids and that kind of stuff. But yeah, big deal. Probably the most any games sold outside of free-to-play games.
Yeah.
As I think GTA 5 recently reached 185 million, which that's a little more ridiculous because that's a game that has not changed as much as Minecraft has over the years. And also, they keep re-releasing it at like full price.
Yeah.
Though nowadays it's on sale for like $10 all the time. But I technically own like 3 copies of that. I beat it once, so great job.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go. Minecraft is probably the biggest game out there sales-wise. In terms of how many people are playing, it's probably a mobile game. Or maybe League of Legends. I don't know, one of those. But there you go. And in more modest news, Lies of P has reached 1 million copies sold.
Yep.
This does not count Game Pass players, just pure sales for that, which is a great news.
Yeah, definitely.
The game's a lot of fun, you know, a lot of very interesting choices for story direction, setting and all that for a game essentially based on the Pinocchio IP of sorts and kind of taking that in the Souls-like direction. And it seems like that's been pretty well rewarded so far here with, you know, a million sales in about a month. So that's great to hear. Wish the best for that team. Maybe they'll make an expansion or something. I don't know, but probably at least making something else after this game's done. So yeah, there you go. Let's get to some bad developer news. Paradox Interactive has announced that they are parting ways with Harebrained Schemes, makers of various strategy games of sorts over the years. And most recently, the Lamplighters League, which seems like they have essentially written off as like a sunk cost because it seems like the game has not done very well at launch, which makes sense because it feels like it's kind of unfinished for as much as they've, you know, put into promoting that game. It feels like it was not as much, you know, money and time put into the game itself as it should have been for the launch. And they've essentially said like, all right, we've done enough of this game. We'll just write this down as a loss and move on. And so much so that they, you know, have let the developer Harebrained Schemes kind of become an independent studio again, though it seems like in the process, they're essentially losing all of the IPs that they had. So the Lamplighters League will continue to be a Paradox Interactive IP, as well as some of their other stuff, Shadowrun and Battletech. I believe are going to continue to be Paradox IPs now.
Yeah.
So now Harebrained Scheme is kind of left to figure out what their next thing is, where to get, you know, funding for the future. Because I believe I've also read that in the process of getting the Lamplighters League out, they had like about 80% of their studio laid off at a certain point. Kind of one of those layoffs that was pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Not really a big public, you know, public announcement thing.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what the talent is that's left at Harebrained Schemes is. So yeah, they're kind of in an unfortunate place.
Yeah.
Because now they're not as valuable of a studio, maybe for another acquisition, but now they're going to basically have to start over again and figure out what's next for them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an unfortunate place for a studio that was at least as talented as they were at one point.
Yeah.
Because they were definitely kind of one of those smaller darling developers out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Paradox seemed like a good fit for them because they make a lot of weird, you know, small darling type of games.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like this one seemed to do so poorly that they wanted nothing to do with the developer after it.
Yeah.
So I guess it's better than the studio being shut down and everybody being laid off, but it's not a whole bunch better. So now all these people are now going to be wondering how financially secure they're going to be for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Some unfortunate news. And then also in unfortunate news, the King Kong game, Skull Island, Rise of Kong, released pretty recently to a lot of memes on the internet about how bad it is.
Yeah.
But that stuff's not really that interesting. But we did get a bit of a report here about how that game came to be. And it seems like it was made on a very tight budget by a studio in, I think, Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can get the name of the studio here. Iguanabe. Based in Santiago, Chile. Publisher Game Mill gave them about a year to develop the game from scratch.
Mm.
They started about June of 2022. It was aimed to finish by June of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it seems like that did not go well. Generally, when you rush developers, things do not go well. Because games are not very easy to make, especially on small budgets and with a bunch of people crunching and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, Game Mill's a well-known publisher of kind of licensed schlock a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things they make that are okay. Like the Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl and Kart Racer stuff is okay. They also made the Cruisin' Blast thing with Nintendo, and that's turned out very well.
Mm-hmm.
But then they get a lot of stuff where you're like, oh, they made crappy Cobra Kai game, crappy G.I. Joe game,
mm-hmm.
Crappy Cartoon Network games and
mm-hmm.
Goosebumps and Frozen, Hotel Transylvania.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Little League World Series game that's not great, and their NHRA stuff that is not great either. And it's like, this is kind of where the mid-tier of licenses kind of ends up at a certain point, is with these kind of publishers where you're either making, you know, mobile games that are reaching different audiences, or mm-hmm. you're making very small budget games with publishers like this mm-hmm. that seems like a roll of the die whether it's going to turn out any good or not
mm-hmm.
Based on whatever budget and developer they end up partnering with kind of stuff. And this one seemed to be on the not good side.
Mm-hmm.
Where they, let's see, They say that Game Mill wouldn't provide teams with all the information about the project, leading to frustration and forcing teams to improvise with the limited information they had. They weren't providing enough money to maintain a large skilled staff of developers. They had anywhere between 2 to 20 people working on the game for most of its development. And yeah, the crunch was pretty bad for most of this year's. So that's not great. It's not what people want, even for the worst games out there that are made, much less the stuff that is really good. And yeah, it kind of just shows that, it's almost kind of a perfect name for this publisher to be called Game Mill. Because they're just grinding these developers into dust to make their shitty bread.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, occasionally, is all right.
Occasionally.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. That's the Skull Island news.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the last you'll hear of that unless...
Yeah.
Somehow it gets big. I don't know. I don't think so.
Mm.
Seems like people are only playing it to goof on it.
Yep.
Because I think there's like one fight you have with some creature that it just randomly pops up a JPEG instead of the character model.
Mm-hmm.
And people are laughing about that. And it's like, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I got better things to do with my time than play that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it doesn't look particularly good. It doesn't seem like it runs very well.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't play very well. It's just a bad one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
A shoestring budget by a small team that had to crunch for too short a time.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to result in a bad game most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's going to be an unfortunate way we end this week, but... we had a lot of fun this week, a lot of games to play.
Yep.
We'll be playing some more of that and hopefully have more to talk about next week. And thank you to Brandon and Danver for joining this week.
Always.
No problem.
We'll be back with some more news as Halloween almost hits. That'll be next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
One more week in October, so we'll have some more stuff to talk about. Alan Wake 2 is this week.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be some more stuff there for people to check out. I'm seeing what else there is. There's the Lord of the Rings Return to Moria. No, that got delayed.
Yeah.
That just got delayed. Metal Gear Solid Master Collection, that's out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost Runner 2, UFC 5. Jusant is the next week.
Mm.
So some interesting stuff. But yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers, they have better things to do than play bad King Kong games.
Mm.
But yeah, we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.